offering humble pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, we welcome you to this week's episode of Shravanam Mananam Nididhyasanam. This is Prem and with me is Hari. We are here to take you through yet another episode and we are still going through the discourse on the Prashnopanishad. We started, we played one clip last week and as we said, there was multiple concepts which Swami spoke about then. We didn't have the opportunity to go through all of it. So probably we'll start today by talking about those points that Swami made in that clip which we played last week before we play the one for this week. But before that, we offer our most loving pranams at Swami's lotus feet and we pray that Swami speaks to us. And I ask Hari to join all of us. Sairam Hari.
Sairam.
So as I was just saying that was a very beautiful clip that we played last week. And yes. Swami is introducing that concept of Nyatum, Drashtum and Praveshtum, right? And we were speaking, of course, more about the Nyatum aspect. Probably I'll just quickly summarize what were the things which we spoke about last week.
Yes.
And Swami was saying that, you know, it's not enough if you just dream for something. Right. Swami made a very beautiful statement. He said the journey from the birth of a desire to its fulfillment is Nyatum, Drashtum and Praveshtum.
Yes.
It's like you don't just wish for it and don't forget it. You have to work for it.
Mm.
And you have to first gather knowledge about what you want to achieve. And then you kind of, you know, are on the lookout for it. And Swami gave the example of if you want to have mangoes, you first find out which is the season in which mangoes come out. Where are the mangoes available?
Mm.
Then you go and see for yourself. And then procure them, and Praveshtum is when you actually eat them.
Yeah.
that was one part. And then, of course, Swami goes on to say about how do you go about gathering this knowledge?
Mm.
In that part, of course, Swami said that you ask the right people.
Yes.
You know, you don't ask anybody. This, I think, many times Swami would say this. When you are seeking happiness, ask people who are already happy.
Yeah.
You know, you ask people who themselves are pretty clueless about happiness, you know, how to be happy, and invariably we get misguided by them.
Yes,
right?
That when you're seeking help from somebody, you must go to a person who's beyond the need of help.
Right, right.
So
I think it's Socrates who would say that, if you want to be pulled out of the water,
yeah,
you'll have to call out to somebody who's standing in the banks.
Banks.
Right? Yeah. And Swami said, it's a very, very important point. He said, first find out who has the knowledge about it.
Yeah.
And then you gain knowledge from them.
Yeah.
And for that, to be able to do that, first of all, you have to acknowledge that what you know is very less. And
yes,
you need to know a lot.
And Swami used to place a lot of emphasis on this, no? that for finding the guru, the right guru. And Swami
right.
says, always seek the Sadguru, no matter what it is. And of course, like ultimately, what we must realize is that finding, like, how are we to recognize a Sadguru? Right? And then the answer comes that, you know, when the devotee's earnestness is so high, it is the Sadguru who manifests himself.
Right.
Just like for a Swami would say that I am the one who comes to you for darshan. You sit in the hall, right, in your place, and I walk to where you are. And when it is the time for your Padnamaskar, I am the one who comes and stands in front of you. I walk the distance so that you get the Padmavaskar.
I think that is a very defining aspect about Swami's approach itself.
Mm.
You know, always that emphasis that whatever needs to be given to you, whatever guidance you need, whatever direction you need, all of it actually comes from inside.
Yes, precisely.
That's one of the most empowering knowledge which is given to us.
Yes.
That Swami, as you're saying, that because a lot of people ask that question, how do you recognize a good guru? So many gurus, how do you know which one is your guru? And that Swami is saying that when you're ripe enough for the journey, the right person will come to you.
Yeah.
Because I think in this discourse or some other discourse I was hearing, Swami says that, you know, you don't realize that it's a guru who is in search of a good disciple.
Yes.
It's not the disciples who are in search of a good guru.
Mm. Mm.
Because it's so rare to find a good disciple, I think.
Absolutely.
Even rarer than to find a good guru, I guess.
But there's this very interesting conversation that I had read in another book. This is from the conversations with the master Nisargadatta Maharaj.
Okay.
And one of the disciples, he asked this astonishing question. he says, what if, you know, the disciple, he goes to a guru, but the guru himself is unripe, then doesn't the disciple undergo damage? Like, you know, so such clarity is there in the reply that he gives. He says that even the guru and the disciple, ultimately both are manifestations of divinity. Mm. Some comedy may take place for a short while, but it does not really affect who they both are. Mm. And he says that's why the earnestness of the disciple, the earnestness of the seeker, that is what determines his progress. Mm. So I'm just saying that sometimes these hypothetical situations occur to us, right? That you see people who are really eager to receive the right, you know, knowledge, and then they happen to come across, you know, somebody who may not be qualified in RI, then that, out of our compassion, we begin to think, no, what happens to that person? Mm. The reply is so amazing that, ultimately they are expressions of the divine. So what is there that the person, what do you mean by saying that, what is the damage he will undergo?
I mean, the whole question comes from the idea of, you know, the scenario of the world. Like, talk about Kali Yuga.
Absolutely.
I mean, everybody is making money and you don't know who is the genuine one, who is this one. But going by that, recently we were listening to some talk in that they were saying that all the rishis and gods, they're really fearful of Kali Yuga. They're saying that, oh God, the very description of it seems to be so scary. Hmm. So what do we do? Apparently they go in search of Vedavyasa, who's supposed to have written so much about Vedanta and the Puranas and all that. So they feel that he might have an idea of what you do in Kali Yuga. So apparently they go to him and he's taking a dip in the river. And he goes in and he comes out and he says, oh God, Kali Yuga is so great. Dips in again. And he comes out and says, oh, Kali Yuga is so marvelous. And again dips inside. And he again comes out, oh, Kali Yuga is so, it's such a heaven for the aspirants. So they stop him and ask, what are you saying? Because the description of Kali Yuga which we hear is so scary. Then he says, see, whatever it is, the spiritual path is only led by the person within. It's got nothing to do with the outside. And it's so much more easier in this age because invariably you will depend on your insight. Right? And you would say that, you know, this is the age where, as Swami would tell many times, Namasmarana is the path, which is so much more easier. But in a sense, it says that whatever is the chaos outside, as long as you're going to be driven by that earnestness and that what he calls Shraddha from inside, everybody has that opportunity. It doesn't really matter how bad the environment around is.
Yeah, and I really caught on to that point you were making about empowerment. So that you recognize a true guru because he does not elevate himself at the cost of the disciple.
Right.
He doesn't say that I am great and you are at a position that is beneath me. Because Swami always emphasized the equality of, you know, himself with everyone else, saying that I am God, but then so are you. Right? The only difference is perhaps you don't know and I know, but that's his compassion, no? That he says that.
Right.
So, as you said, empowering context of the guru. Right? And again, like, Swami himself would say that you have to rely on your conscience, what is within you, the voice of God that is within you. Swami would say to rely on that. And there is like such a democratic
absolutely. Guru. I was talking to one of the youngsters one day and this point came up. That, you know, you all are so fortunate, you lived for so many years with Swami. And that is enough and you'll know exactly what
you're...
I just told that person that if that is really true, then you should have an ashram full of realized people.
Yeah.
Right? And we've literally seen people going astray after 30 years with Swami,
after
20 years with Swami.
Correct.
I think that's an indication that it always depends on your inside. You know, Swami only is kind of a reflection of your earnestness from within.
Absolutely.
And he's only going to take you as much as you wish to go.
And plus Swami himself said, I respond to your image of who I am.
Exactly.
Right? If you are then relying on the physical form, you look at Swami as somebody who is there for you to, you know, relate your woes to him and then he's there to listen, then he's going to be that for you.
Right.
But if you look at him as somebody who will take you so far on the spiritual journey, and he'll respond exactly to that.
Right.
So Swami himself has said this, as you imagine I am, I respond to that.
Exactly.
As you create me.
And then of course Swami goes on to speak about this humility aspect. He says I mean, even the greatest of scientists know very little.
Yes.
You know, you need to have that feeling that what I know is very little. Mm-hmm. And this again is a very central idea in Vedas itself.
Mm.
That the more you learn, and if your learning is in the right direction, it will manifest itself as humility in you.
Yes.
The more you learn, you will find that you're becoming more humble.
Yes.
If you're learning and becoming more arrogant, then you're not learning the right things, or probably you're not learning it the right way.
Yeah. In fact, very coincidentally, as reading one article this morning, I think it was either in the Washington Post or the New York Magazine, but they were speaking about people who are so fixated in their beliefs. Like they're looking at the political scenario in America, and you could see a similar thing in India also. It's so polarized, left and right. It's right. So polarized, and each one stands their ground, saying that we are right. But this article speaks so beautifully about the attitude which really takes you forward is curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where you don't stand on saying I already know enough. There's a lot more.
Right.
And they said that whatever progress the world sees in the form of intellectual growth is because of curiosity, nothing else.
Absolutely. Right. And in fact, I was coming across, you know, interestingly, our defense minister, Manohar Parikar, he was giving a talk to the scientists at ISRO.
Mm.
I mean, the statement which he made was really catchy. Because he was talking to the scientists about rishis. He said, okay, I'm not telling that rishis are scientists. But they did have a lot of intellectual knowledge and they were characterized by humility. So he said humility is a characteristic of learned people.
Yes.
So he makes this very beautiful statement. He says, you know, power enhances with restraint. Education enhances with humility.
Oh, beautiful.
Right? Very, very beautiful. And, you know, that's really the culture where
Vidya Dadati.
Vidya Dadati Vinayam. Swami was mentioning that point. And then Swami goes on to this small part about awareness, which is very beautiful. You know, where Swami was saying that knowledge is one thing, awareness is that complete knowledge. You know about the... Swami was giving the example of the handkerchief. You know only one bit of it, then it's knowledge. If you know it entirely, then it becomes awareness. And then Swami says that knowing with reference to Desha Kala Paristhiti, you know, the ability to... I mean, that really defines wisdom.
Yes.
The ability to take a dictum from the scriptures and apply it to that scenario which we are going through, which is defined by the time period, by the people involved, and all of that. And that's where wisdom stays. I mean, because we find that the misquoting of the scriptures is like the order of the day.
Yes, yes.
You know, be it any religion scriptures.
But even as you are saying this, you know, the first thought that struck me is, when you said Desha Kala Paristhiti, a person has to be aware of Desha Kala Paristhiti in like a 360 degree view or a multi-dimensional view, the first thought that crossed my mind was, but can an individual achieve this?
Right.
You know,
right.
And I was about to say that maybe this is possible only for Swami, and then it struck me, if that were the case, why would Swami be telling us this? You know, it clearly means that we do have an access to precisely that. And as Swami says, you know, it is in the depths of silence that the voice of God is heard.
Right.
And in the previous segments of discourses that Swami spoke about, it was entirely about like how the senses, you know, as long as you stop being a slave to the senses, you have access to silence.
Right.
And the moment you have access to silence, you have access to the voice of God. And you have access to the voice of God, you have this complete awareness available to you.
Exactly. I mean, that, as Swami was saying, you know, that's where you should be heading towards. Don't be satisfied with knowledge. And the statement which Swami makes is, you know, when you seek knowledge, there is something which is lacking. That's why you're seeking to understand. You know, Swami was saying that, you know, the same example of the mangoes. You want something, and to fulfill that want as a process, you seek knowledge.
Yeah.
Right? So there's a craving or some restlessness which is resulting in this knowledge gathering. And then Swami says, perfect contentment is possible only with awareness. You know, beautiful. He doesn't say that any amount of knowledge will not give you perfect contentment. Perfect contentment comes from awareness, and awareness is complete knowledge.
Right.
And maybe one thing is, of course, individually heading towards that, The second thing is what we have seen with Swami. You know, even though Swami was somebody who had this 360 degree view, when you see Swami as an administrator, he will always take the opinion of the people involved.
Hmm.
Like, you know, suppose there is something, Swami will ask the vice chancellor, I mean, are the boys free now? Will they be able to participate in this? And then Swami will ask the warden, are there boys who can sing, who can, you know, have the requisite talent? Though he knows everything, as an administrator, I mean, even if you're not able to have that complete 360 degree knowledge, you have the humility to, you know, gather that knowledge from all the people and then make a decision, rather than, you know, being a one-man decision maker there.
Yeah, I remember a conversation, this Swami's driver, Mr. Padmanabhan, he once shared with me, he said that there was like one particular point, Swami had given a particular instruction to him to take care of some business about the car, one of the cars that Swami had. But he is a professional, no? Like Padmanabhan, he is a professional, he is a driver, and he had some opposite opinion. And he said that I went up to Swami and he said, Swami, I feel this way, this is what should be done. And he described the conversation that ultimately I did whatever Swami wanted me to do. But he said that, that in that space of about it, that conversation lasted for 15-20 minutes, Swami at no point showed any irritation, but just kept listening. You know, whatever Mr. Padmanabhan, whatever he told Swami, Swami would listen very attentively. Oh, okay, is it? But still I want you to do this. And again he would object from another angle. And again Swami would listen. He says that I'll never forget that conversation, because I could see that Swami had enormous regard and respect for me as an individual. You know, I do not know how many people can say with honesty that that is how they regard their employees or their workers or their drivers, you know. But he was saying that this is what I'll never forget, you know, the way Swami, with so much patience, respect, you know, he was listening to me. And I think like we can go on and on about it.
And of course, after that, there's just one point, probably we'll make this point and we'll go on to the next one, where Swami was talking about the qualities a student requires. It's literally summarizing whatever Swami had spoken till that point, where Swami was saying that humility, obedience, control of senses, chitta shuddhi, renunciation and focus. Swami said all of this should be there, and focus, of course, Swami was saying that, you know, when you have a goal in mind, that should be the goal throughout. That should be, I mean, every waking moment you know that that's your focus, that's your goal. Not like in the morning you have a goal, in the afternoon you have another goal. And when you retire at night, you kind of focus on something else. That focus, and Swami was saying, you know, how each one, the moment that focus is there, everything else falls in place. That renunciation comes automatically. As we were talking, I think, a couple of weeks back, you know, for the sake of purpose, you don't mind giving up a little bit of pleasure, giving up a little bit of the other activities, right?
And actually, Swami used to say it in such a memorable fashion. He used to say, be clear and the rest will follow.
Exactly. Yeah. No, that being clear is that being absolutely focused on what you really want. So that was where we stopped last week. So we'll go to the next clip. Again, I think this clip is also one where Swami makes a few very beautiful, explains a few beautiful concepts. So we listen to that.
కనుకనే డివోషన్ డిస్క్రిమినేషన్ డిటర్మినేషన్ ఉండటం చేతనే ఆ దివ్యత్వాన్ని వారు పొందగలిగారు.
సిన్స్ దే హ్యాడ్ డివోషన్ డిస్క్రిమినేషన్ అండ్ డిటర్మినేషన్ దే వర్ ఏబుల్ టు అటైన్ డివినిటీ.
ఈ నాటి డివోషన్ అంతా డీప్ ఓషన్ ఏమిటి, ఎక్కడ ఉంది?
టుడేస్ డివోషన్ ఇస్ లైక్ డీప్ ఓషన్, వేర్ ఈజ్ ఇట్?
ఈ డివోషన్ కూడా మనకు కనిపించటం లేదు.
ఈవెన్ దిస్ డివోషన్ ఇస్ నాట్ టు బి సీన్ టుడే.
కేవలం ఏదో డివోషన్ డివోషన్ అనుకుంటే ఏదో జపం చేయటం ధ్యానం చేయటం డివోషన్ కాదు.
వి సే డివోషన్ డివోషన్, మియర్లీ మెడిటేటింగ్ అండ్ డూయింగ్ జపం ఆర్ నాట్ డివోషన్.
మన యొక్క ఆశయాల నిమిత్తమే జీవితాన్ని త్యాగం చేయాలి.
ఫర్ ద సేక్ ఆఫ్ అవర్ ఐడియల్స్ వి మస్ట్ సాక్రిఫైస్ అవర్ లైఫ్.
ఇది నిజమైన డివోషన్.
దిస్ ఇస్ ట్రూ డివోషన్.
మనం చేసే ప్రతి పని పైన కూడా చాలా శ్రద్ధను పూనాలి.
We need to put in more diligence in the work we do.
ఈ కార్యము జరిగేంత వరకు కూడాను మనం ఏ మాత్రం కూడాను చెలించరాదు.
We cannot be perturbed till the task is accomplished.
అది నిజమైన ప్రతి ఒక్క పట్టుదల.
That is true determination.
duty is God, work is worship.
That is, duty is God and work is worship. Whatever you are supposed to do, doing it sincerely, you must consider that itself as your devotion.
Discrimination.
Next, discrimination.
మన డిస్క్రిమినేషన్ ఎట్లా చేస్తున్నాం?
హౌ డూ వి డిస్క్రిమినేట్?
మన అవసరాన్ని బట్టి డిస్క్రిమినేషన్ చేస్తున్నాం.
వి డిస్క్రిమినేట్ బేస్డ్ ఆన్ అవర్ నీడ్స్.
మన అనుకూలాన్ని బట్టి డిస్క్రిమినేషన్ చేస్తున్నాం.
వి డిస్క్రిమినేట్ అకార్డింగ్ టు అవర్ కన్వీనియన్స్.
మన సమన్వయాన్ని బట్టి డిస్క్రిమినేషన్ చేస్తున్నాం.
వి డిస్క్రిమినేట్ బేస్డ్ ఆన్ అవర్ సర్కమ్స్టాన్సెస్.
మన సమర్థతను గురించి డిస్క్రిమినేషన్ చేస్తున్నాం.
వి డిస్క్రిమినేట్ బేస్డ్ ఆన్ అవర్ ఎబిలిటీస్. Even when we are at fault, we discriminate to defend our lapses. This is not the right kind of discrimination. This is merely selfish discrimination. This is merely individual discrimination.
Discrimination, fundamental discrimination.
We need fundamental discrimination.
నాకు నీకు వారికి ఎవరికైనప్పుడు సత్యం సత్యంగానే ఉండాలి.
For you, me or him, and for everyone, truth should always remain the truth.
నీ డిస్క్రిమినేషన్ ఎవరు చేసినా ఇది రైట్ అనేటువంటి దీంతో జవాబు రావాలి.
The discrimination that you have done, when done by anybody else, should give the same right answer.
కానీ ఈనాటి డిస్క్రిమినేషన్ రావటం లేదు.
But that is not the case with today's discrimination. They discriminate in order to support and justify themselves. This is quite opposite path in students. So, we need such social discrimination that is same for all.
ఈ విధమైన డిస్క్రిమినేషన్ చేసినప్పుడే నీవు అన్నిటికీ కూడాను అధికారి కాగలవు.
ఓన్లీ వెన్ వి డిస్క్రిమినేట్ దిస్ వే యూ బికమ్ ఎన్ అథారిటీ ఫర్ ఎవ్రీథింగ్.
లేకపోతే కొన్ని శిక్షలకు గురి కావాల్సి వస్తుంది.
అదర్వైజ్ వన్ హ్యాస్ టు ఫేస్ ది ఆర్డియల్.
ఇండివిజువల్ ఫ్రీడమ్ ఒకటి, ఫండమెంటల్ లా మరొకటి.
ఇండివిజువల్ ఫ్రీడమ్ ఇస్ వన్ థింగ్ అండ్ ఫండమెంటల్ లా ఇస్ అనదర్.
ఇండివిజువల్ ఫ్రీడమ్ ఏ రీతిగా ఉంటుంటుంది?
హౌ ఇస్ ఇండివిజువల్ ఫ్రీడమ్?
నీవు ఒక కర్రను తీసుకుని చక్కగా కసరత్తు చేయాలని ఆశిస్తావు.
యు పిక్ అప్ అ స్టిక్ అండ్ విష్ టు ఎక్సర్సైజ్ విత్ ఇట్.
ఎక్సర్సైజ్ చేయాలి, కానీ ఆ విధంగా చేయాలనుకుంటే నీ కంపౌండ్ లో నువ్వు చేసుకో, నీ టెరెస్ పైన నువ్వు చేసుకో, నీ యొక్క దీంట్లో ఎక్కడైనా నువ్వు చేసుకో, తప్పులేదు. కానీ ఆ పెద్ద కర్రను తీసుకుని వచ్చి పబ్లిక్ రోడ్ లో వచ్చేసేసి నువ్వు తిప్పుతూ కూర్చుంటుంటే ఇది ఫండమెంటల్ లాకు విరుద్ధం అవుతుంది.
ఇఫ్ యూ విష్ టు ఎక్సర్సైజ్ దాట్ వే, డూ ఇట్ ఇన్ యువర్ ఓన్ కాంపౌండ్ ఆర్ టెరెస్ ఆర్ ఎనీవేర్ in your place, it is not wrong. But if you bring that long stick to a public place and start waving it around, it would be a transgression of fundamental law. Then police will come and arrest you. How must discrimination be? As much as your freedom is necessary to you, as important it is, so is the freedom for the person before you. You should experience such a freedom that does not hinder the freedom of the person before you. That's it. When you exercise with the stick, the pedestrian on the road has also got the freedom to escape from it and move on. You are becoming a hindrance to his freedom.
The end of wisdom is freedom. The end of culture is perfection. The end of knowledge is love, not allergy.
So this is not freedom. The end of wisdom is freedom. The end of culture is perfection. The end of knowledge is love. In today's students, the weakness is changing into love.
కాదు కాదు, పవిత్రమైనటువంటి దీక్షతో కూడినటువంటిదిగా ఉంటుండాలి.
No, no, it must be with sacred determination. Therefore, the day we lose that energy, then allergy begins in us. So we must not give scope for allergy. We must develop energy. That is the strength related to the mind. We need to protect this mental strength from withering away. Pipilada gave such teachings to the students. Students are the future saviors of India. In future, they are the leaders who will be taking care of this entire universe. Students who are to become such leaders, how much strength and intelligence must they acquire? Instead, they fight clamoring for rights.
What about responsibility?
But what about responsibility? Only when we discharge our responsibilities, we become worthy of rights.
Right and responsibility, rendu wings.
So, in life, rights and responsibilities are like two wheels or two wings. Students should not fight just for rights. They must focus on responsibilities too. We must carry out our duties too. As we are students, the responsibility towards parents, the responsibility towards society, the responsibility towards the country, and the responsibility towards this life, all of these have to be carried out. Only when we behave with such responsibility, our rights would come to us automatically. Therefore, students must first and foremost recognize responsibility. When a sense of responsibility comes, automatically rights would come to us. When we abandon responsibility, we will not get any rights.
That was the next clip in that discourse, and you could see that clearly that entire clip was on three D's, which Swami would often speak about: devotion, discrimination, and determination. And again, as we were talking about the previous clip, it comes from there. Swami spoke about focus towards the end. And then, I mean, literally, devotion, Swami does not define it as bhakti here. You know,
bhakti to a, or a devotion to a personal.
Right, it's yeah. It's like devotion. It's like being devoted to your goal, being devoted to the cause that you have, you know, bequeathed yourself.
Yeah.
It's almost like that. Swami is saying that when that kind of devotion is there, and Swami was very powerfully saying that you wouldn't hesitate even to, you know, lay your life for that purpose.
Yeah.
That sort of devotion.
That's a very, very strong, what shall I say, exhortation to each one of us.
Right.
You know, what happens is, like, when we take up a personal ideal, like, say, truth, as Swami speaks about, or integrity, honesty, any of these, the moment we make it like a virtue, at some point of time, we're going to break it when it is our convenience.
Right.
It almost always happens. But when you make it about your word to Swami, you know, this is what I give you. And Swami says, in that case, like, no matter what it is, like, even if it costs you your life, and Swami says, do not this thing. And I think that really is true devotion. to Swami.
That's a very beautiful point that you made. Looking at these as values, merely as things which kind of add value to you. When in danger, let's say that you're in a sinking ship or something and you want to let go of some things to save your life, you will let go of even things which you are very fond of, right? Your possessions or something, or your luggage or something, you wouldn't mind letting go of them. But you won't let go of something which is real, which is not just something which adds value to you, which is really what makes you. And I think that's the difference which Swami also would say, that the famous conversation which we quoted many times. In Thrai, there was a conversation which Swami had with one of the personnel from the army, where Swami was talking about Dharma, and Swami said, at any cost you have to stand by Dharma. So this person said, Swami, how is it possible? In the army, if my senior or superior gives me a command, I just have to obey him. Because if I disobey, it becomes, it's criminal, I'll get court-martialed. Swami said, no, nothing like that. If it is adharmic, you should not follow. So he said, no, Swami, I can't do that. Swami said, what will happen? I'll be court-martialed, I'll lose my rank. Swami said, okay, what will happen? Swami, I'll lose my job. So what? Swami, I'll come to the streets with my family. Swami said, so what? From Swami's point of view, he's saying that, are you valuing all of these things that you just mentioned more than dharma and truth?
Precisely, yes.
Swami's saying, in spite of, even if you have to give up all these things, you have to uphold what you have to uphold. That's so much more sacred than all of these things that you just mentioned.
Yes. Right? And otherwise, it's like mere pretense.
Right.
Being you could be, around Swami like a fly on the wall. But it would make absolutely no difference.
Right.
And Swami is very clear. You're around me, and that's, I'm opening up a space, an opportunity for you to become who you truly are. And that's an opportunity you lose the moment you stand back, from this statement which says that no matter what. And I recall, there is one devotee who had come to me. And she was working she was in a well-placed job. And she had this dilemma. She said that, sometimes in my job, it's like, finance, the world of finance. She says, sometimes in my job, it feels like I have to sacrifice this integrity, and my boss, he tries to make me do it. And sometimes I refuse to do it. And so I'm losing my position. And I recalled, what I was, for a while I was thinking, on the one hand I can clearly say, that yes, you should stand for your principles. But then she has this dilemma, and I realize the missing link is that she is not willing to take her boss along with her when she says, I am going to stand for the truth. It's not, Swami says, your spiritual evolution is, it's not an individual journey. And either the missing link is that communication. Either you can tell your boss that you cannot get this done through me. I'm really sorry. Please don't take it personally, but I will not be able to do this the way you asked me to. And that's it. That's what it is. And the thing is that if you can convince, I know of people who've said this. They said, boss, just give me a chance. Don't worry. I will carry it through. Right? Let me do it the way, the dharmic way that I feel, and you see the results.
Right.
It's not that you stand like a radical and say like, oh, you are adharmic, and write the person off like a rakshasa, and I am the, it is that you have to carry that person along with you. That is a bigger challenge.
Right.
You can, of course, tread the path on your own, but are you going to leave people behind?
Exactly. That's the confidence which Swami would want us to have, because when Swami would say, dharmo rakshati rakshita, Swami would say, in that context which I was telling, Swami said that, dharmo rakshate rakshita, you don't even have confidence in that. You don't have the confidence that your truth will protect you. A couple of days back, we were listening to one of our professors narrate an incident from his previous job. When he was working in the corporate, he was his boss's favorite junior, and the boss had a lot of confidence in him. And at one point, it so happened that the boss was asking him to do something which is not right. He said that there was no way I could do it, because I absolutely knew that it's not right. It's almost illegal, and my conscience doesn't permit me to do that. So he went and told the boss. say, I will not be able to do that. Please don't force me to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So he literally, I think, lost that position.
Mm.
The position that the boss had, I mean, he had in the boss's eye, as well as in the company. So someone else was put in that position and the work was done. Okay? So this person kind of stayed away from that whole scenario. But he said about a few years later, this very boss, he came away from that company and he set up a company of his own. And that time, he called this man, not the person who did the work for him.
Correct.
Yeah. Right? And he said, see, that's what everybody knows the value of goodness.
Yes.
Everybody knows the value of being honest.
Yeah. I remember one old student saying this. He said, you know, it was like he wanted to be with Swami because Swami had told him that I will, you know, call you for an interview. And he just stayed on here. For a very long time, like I'll not be able to tell the entire details, but you know, everybody in Prashantini was questioning him. They'd say, you'd lose your job, you know, you'd lose the promotions, future promotions. Do you think it is wise for you to sit here waiting for Swami's interview rather than, you know, go back and resume your job, continue your job? I was there when he said this to a very senior teacher. He very clearly he told, sir, I may, you know, getting job, earning money, this is not a big deal. Anybody can do it and therefore I can. But once you lose Swami, you will never regain him back. It is very, very tough. And I don't want to let go of Swami. Other things automatically I'll get, sir. And I tell you, this is something that happened in front of my eyes, that it almost a month more Swami made him wait. At the end of that 1 month, Swami granted him interview, and at the end, you know, next day, this person came rushing to me, said, Hari, you'll never believe it. I thought, I called up my boss and I thought my job is gone, but he's telling me, come back and we have given you a promotion. Would you believe it? Like, you know, it sounds like something straight out of a movie or a script, but this happened. Totally, you know, you can see that what he said, no? Dharmo Rakshati Rakshita, like you stand with God. Because I remember Brother Satyajit, he used to be the physical attender of Swami. He told me this. He said, Hari, there will be situations that Swami will put in front of you where you have to make a very difficult choice. You have to either choose the world or you have to choose Swami. And then he looked at me, I'll never forget that. He looked at me, he said, you know, you just keep choosing Swami and everything will be taken care of. So, Swami is very clear, you know, that when he presents a situation like this, where you are standing for a virtue, for truth, for, you know, integrity, when you are standing for such things, it's a choice that you are making between the world and him.
Right.
And that is up to us, like what we choose.
Exactly, as we were telling about the previous clip, Swami says the moment that focus is there, be clear, rest will follow. The moment that focus is there, you wouldn't see the other things as sacrifices. As you know, one of our students was saying that, oh, you sacrificed so much. And he said, you know, Swami had called for an interview and Swami told him, no, you go back and stay with your parents and take up a job and be with them. Okay. And this boy comes out of the interview room and he says, you know what, I am doing the true sacrifice. Because I am giving up Swami and going to the world.
True.
He said, I mean, that's the perspective. Because when you are really, as you're saying, choosing Swami at every point, you are actually not sacrificing the world. You are choosing something which is higher. Because we are, at the end of the day, selfish people. Right? And when we have this clear in our head that this is a better option, every time we are actually making a wise choice. We are not making a noble, you know, sacrifice or anything like that.
Yes.
And that's precisely what Swami is saying and talking about empowering. You know, that's the attitude which you get, that boy saying that I can always get a job. You know, Swami would always hit us with that idea. You know, how much do you need to feed yourself and the people who are dependent on you?
Yes.
It's so simple. And, you know, when you constantly keep hitting yourself with the idea, you're fearless actually to hold on to that. You know, more than anything else, you need fearlessness to stick to truth and dharma.
And
or to your goal. Right?
I'm so sorry.
Right.
No, this is, I was thinking of this even as you said this, that devotion, it is that devotion that leads us to have, to place, you know, these values above, on a high pedestal above everything else.
Right.
You know, and I was just thinking of this. See, I work as senior manager, accounts and purchases for the trust, and especially looking at the hospitals.
Right.
I had this opportunity about 3 years back. We were sitting for a negotiation for purchase of MRI,
mm-hmm.
you know, magnetic resonance imaging scanner, and a cath lab for both the hospitals, you know, Whitefield Hospital and Parthi Hospital. We were buying a CT scanner here. And I recall all the big wigs are there, you know, from each of the big manufacturers. You got the people from Philips mm-hmm. coming in, you got people from Siemens coming in. And I would, you know, almost every week I would make a trip to Whitefield to sit, you know, along with the team for the negotiations. And I was still a young member of the team. And at some point of time, I got this strange thought. I was beginning to wonder, like, we are just purchasing like one unit of, you know, an MRI or a CT scanner. Just one we are purchasing, and we are bargaining like anything, cutting it down to maybe, you know, a fraction of the price. And why are they trying to oblige us? This thought came to my mind. It's not a bulk purchase. What is it in for them? Like, why can't they just walk away from the table saying that these prices are not acceptable to us? So I went up and asked them. I said, sir, what is driving you to come here time after time, you know, for these negotiations? And he said that this is Satya Sai Hospital, and when we sell our, you know, machine to this hospital, what happens is all the hospitals, not only in this city but also in Chennai, they look at that Satya Sai Hospital has bought this equipment. I still didn't get the point. I said, but, you know, we are not in the larger scheme of things. It's still just one hospital. Right. It's just one hospital. He said, it's not that. Everybody knows that when Satya Sai Hospital buys, there are no kickbacks involved. It is purely on the merit of the equipment. Its value for money, pure rational, you know, choice based on that. And then people know that this equipment can be trusted. That is why they purchased it. Then it's really struck me that what enormous respect Swami has generated. And because of that, how we as a trust, you know, we uphold that. It never crosses our mind, you know, that for me it was something, you know, wild, that thought that something like this people can mess with. But really it was something. And even now when I see, I really feel thankful that I work in an organization like this, where absolutely, I recall even a couple of years back, there were some permissions we had to get from the government. And somebody suggested, you know, they said, I'll put you in touch with an agent who will get it done for you. I was very naive. I said, yeah, if he can get it done, that's great. And then somewhere after I started talking to that agent, suddenly it struck me, I asked him, but how do you get it done so fast? I've been struggling. He says, sir, obviously I have to grease the palms of some people. At that moment, I just, you know, I had to break off the conversation. I told him very clearly, sir, our organization, we don't do things like this. So, I'm sorry, I can't continue this with you. No questions asked. You know, later I thought about it, I did not have to talk to my top management and ask.
Right.
Even at my level, I just had to do it. I remember, you know, 2 weeks later, I remembered and I told the secretary of the trust, sir, it's going to get delayed, but I did this, you know, I just told him I cannot continue because you're greasing the palms of people, you know, in the government. Then, for him also, it was nothing remarkable. He said, yeah, okay, that's correct. That's all. You know, it's so matter of fact, so routine. And because that is the kind of value system the Swami has instilled.
Right.
And for us, it's inviolable. We don't even think twice. You know?
And, you know, just coming from what you were talking about, you know, that when you maintain that kind of purity, even when you're talking about discrimination, you know, when you're talking about dharma and probably dilemmas, moral dilemmas, you're referring to using your discrimination. And Swami is saying that, you know, all of us are pretty capable of using our discrimination, but what really masks it or, you know, it pollutes it is when there is selfishness involved, self-interest involved. And Swami is saying that that's the whole problem. We all, you know, very beautifully Swami said in that part, all of us do discrimination, all of us have discrimination, but we only do it to justify ourselves, we only do it to, you know, serve ourselves. And that's where the whole problem comes.
Yes. And the human capability for justification, giving reasons, is unparalleled. Like, It's if you want to know each that, one of us can be a philosophical emperor.
You know, when I started seeing some of these debates on the TV about political issues and all that, you know, when you don't read anything else, you just go by what you hear on the television.
Yeah.
Everybody is so convincing.
True.
You know, you can't put a person there in spot because everybody is like able to convince their stance and their this one, and oh my God, it's amazing. I mean, as Swami was saying, Swami would use the word vikriti, you know, the crookedness of the human intellect.
Sophistry, right? As they call it. No?
Right. Oh, it's enormous. And, and you know, the thing is, as when we were in school, when we kind of dodge a lesson or we don't do the homework and all that, the parents and even teachers would say that. They would say that, just stop and ask, whom are you cheating?
Yeah.
Whom are you fooling? I mean, you're not fooling the teachers, you're not fooling your parents, you're actually fooling yourself.
Yes.
And that's precisely what happens when you misuse discrimination. And Swami says that, I mean, what are you going to gain? What are you, you think that you're serving yourself, but end of the day you actually, you know, literally walking backwards. You know, you're not heading towards where you're supposed to go. And Swami makes that point so clearly. And a point which Swami made was very interesting. He said, when you do discrimination, do it in a manner that anybody else does the same discrimination in the same unbiased manner, the result should be the same.
Yes.
Then the discrimination that you've done is right.
Yes. And the world may even then still point out, you know, but saying that, no, what you did was wrong. But when you actually keep digging at it, it just comes back to, as you said, it is wrong for you, like for your personal survival.
Right.
But Swami is holding it like beyond, you know. He says it's about time you stopped taking yourself to be this individual and stepped up into this, step up into the bigger role of who you truly are. Stand there. It's time.
And again, it comes back to that point, I think, which Swami made in the first discourse in the series. He said, morality, I mean, we speak so much about morality, morality in politics and morality in business life. Swami made that statement, morality cannot grow unless there is an environment of spirituality. Unless, as you're saying, that idea that I am not this body, I am not this individual, and my goal is something larger. The destination is not just, you know, welfare of yourself and your family right now. Unless that spiritual vision is there, morality is not on strong ground. You know, you might be moral in given situations, but when you're really tested, it kind of falls away. Unless you really have this kind of a you know, higher vision. And it's a very, very beautiful point Swami said. You know, morality cannot be established unless there is a spiritual environment.
Absolutely, yes. Right?
And then Swami goes on to speak about rights and responsibility. But again, I think we are close to our closing time. We'll push it to next week because Swami is going to deliberate a little further on this.
And it is
concept.
One of very, very important. Go by the frequency of the, you know, the number of times that Swami has brought up rights, responsibilities. In my perhaps like 10 years of or 15 years of listening to Swami's discourses, these are some of the keywords.
Exactly.
So I think we have to
reserve
it.
And the way Swami is connecting it, you know, discrimination to freedom, rights and responsibilities.
Yeah, there's a lot to be built on.
In fact, in the 90 series also, Swami, in that discourse which was about what is freedom, Swami spent a good amount of the time speaking about what is the distinction between duty and right, right and responsibility. So we'll pass it on to the next week. We'll start next week by talking a little about what Swami said in that clip.
Correct.
So dear listeners, we'll have to end the program here. It's 8:30 and it's time for the next segment. Bishu is going to be here shortly to take you through that. On behalf of Hari, on behalf of all of you and myself, I offer this humble effort at Swami's lotus feet. Do join us again next week at 7:30 for the next episode of Shravanam Mananam Nididhyasanam. I think we'll be continuing this discourse for at least a couple of weeks more. So do join us again next week. Thank you. Jai Sainam.